message is an important message, one that resonates with me a lot. And hopefully, maybe you'll think about things just a little differently. So, let me begin with a basic principle, okay? The Torah is a shira. It's a song. It's a song written by the greatest composer who ever lived, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what makes it so unique, what makes the song so unique, is that God actually wants us to be his partner in this song. Which means that as the song evolves, we can add to this song. It's not stagnant. It's not static. It's growing all the time. And we know we have a concept, it's called Shiva Fanam LaTorah, that every single word in the Torah has 70 different explanations, and probably 700,000 explanations. And we have a thing called pardes. The Torah is called a pardes. Shat, remesh, drush, and so. But there are different levels of the Torah. You can constantly find new things. And I'm sure all of you here, at this day of Shabbos, when we did Parshas Mishpatim, I looked at it for the first time in my life all over again. And I found 10 new things I never thought of before. That's the beauty of what the Torah is all about. And so tonight, what I want to talk to you about a little bit is something that happened to me when I was able, somehow, miraculously, to find a secret in the Torah, a sod in the Torah. And once I found this sod in the Torah, the secret in the Torah, it changed a lot of the ways I look at everything in my life. So there are certain basic principles in the Torah. One principle in Jewish life is what I call preparation. In Jewish life, we are always constantly being prepared. Nothing happens by accident in Jewish life. All week long, what do we do when we daven? Hayom Shlishi LeShabbos, Revi'i, so on and so forth. We're constantly preparing for Shabbos, all the time. Shabbos doesn't come along all of a sudden and we say, oh, we didn't know what was happening. And when we start the year, we start the Chodesh Elul, people come to Israel, they start the Chodesh Elul, they're preparing already for Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah, you're preparing for Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur, you're preparing for Sukkot. And you're already preparing soon, as we have Purim, we're going to start preparing for Pesach. Things don't happen by accident in the Torah. Everything needs preparation. That's an important, important understanding. And the second one is, generally speaking, we do not understand the reward that we get for doing the mitzvah. Right? The Gemara talks about it in Kedushin. We don't really understand the reward that we get for doing the mitzvah. Why is it that the Torah tells us about one of the great people, Noach? What does it say? The Noach Matzah Chen De'nei Hashem. God liked Noach. Does anybody here know why God liked Noach? Oh, is he a nice guy? Friendly? Did he have a bigger mezuzah? Did he keep the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach? What did he do? What did he do that God loved him? Nobody talks about it. Chaim talks about it a little bit, but the basic concept is, sometimes we do things that God loves us, and other times we do things that God maybe doesn't love us as much, but we don't honestly know the rewards of the mitzvah, except for maybe 3 or 4 times in the Torah, but really 2 of them have gotten really, really good press. So everyone can tell me they all know what they are. What are the 2 times that the Torah actually tells us what is the reward for doing the mitzvah? Okay. Well, if you know it, which one? First one is Kibbut Av V'Aim. Shuluach HaTam. Okay. Those are the 2. There are several others also. One, by the way, that people have forgotten, which is basically to be honest in your business, in your dealings. That you should have an Evan Shlema, that when you conduct your business, you should do it honestly. And if you do, you're going to get a good reward. So you're right. So the 2 times the Torah tells us, if you do this, you're going to get a reward. And the reward is going to be long life. Arichas yamim v'shanim. You're going to have a good long life. Which is a pretty good reward, right? I mean, most people would sign up for that, correct? So, let's look at these 2 mitzvahs. One, of course, we just read recently, when we talk about Kibbut Av V'Aim, the Torah tells us in Parsha Yisra, what does it say? Kabeis l'avicha v'yasimecha l'man yarichin yimecha l'adama. Honor your father and your mother, and so you're going to have a long life. If you honor your father and your mother, you're going to live a long life. Sounds good, right? Sounds good. And it tells us another time in Parshas Eskanan, Kabeinus Avichu Besimecha, Kashet Sifla Hashem Elokecha, honor your father and your mother, just like I had commanded you. Leman Yarichan Yomecha, so your days will be lengthened. Leman Yitavlach, and the days that you have, that I've given you long life, these days will be wonderful life for you. So remember that. What does the Torah tell you? Leman Yarichan Yomecha, Leman Yitavlach. I'm going to give you a long life, but not just a long life, I'm going to give you a long life that's going to be wonderful for you. Now, I want to talk about the first thing, which is preparation. Do you have to prepare to understand Kibbut Avaim? The Torah talks about it all the time. The Gemara talks about it. How do we honor this cover, this yira? How do we act to our parents in their lifetime, after their lifetime? The Gemara talks about the famous person who was willing not to wake up his father, and so on and so forth. There's a lot to prepare when you want to honor your father and your mother. Questions about how much money do I have to spend? That's in a little faraway place. Do I have to spend all my money to see them? There are many, many things. You have to prepare to honor your father and your mother. But at least we know that there's a reward for it. So getting back to the principles, preparation, reward, okay, keep it out of aim. You have to prepare for it. But you're going to find out, you're going to know the mitzvah. And now I want to talk about the mitzvah that I found the secret to. The mitzvah is the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan, or Shiluach HaKain, depending on which part of New York you come from. And I want to try to understand it. Because truthfully, it doesn't fit into any category, nor does it really make any real sense. And it needs a lot of explanation. So what does the Torah tell us? Okay, the Torah tells us, Yikare kantipar levanecha baderech. One day you're walking here in Yerushalayim, you're walking wherever you live, and all of a sudden, what you do is, you find baderech b'chal eitzo, b'chal aretz, efrochim leveitzim, and you see these little chicks, v'eim rovesis el afrochim leveitzim. So you now you're walking. You're walking on the street, and you see this little bird hovering over the little chicks. And you say to yourself, you know, I think I really want to take those chicks for myself. It's going to be a great idea. Torah says, no, 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 not so fast. You can't do that. Because if you do that, the mother, we have a sensitivity to that mother bird is going to be anguished, full of anguish, to see you take those little chicks. So you can't do that. We'll tell you about what you have to do. He said, maybe I'll take the bird. No, you can't do that because you're going to leave the chicks. Can I take both of them together? No, you can't because there's a halacha of Oso Ves, but no, the same day you can't do both. What is the Torah telling you to do? So the Torah tells you, why are you supposed to do? Shaleach tishalach ha'im. Send away the mother bird. Send it away. Shoo it away. Send it away. That's habanim tikachla, and then you can keep those little chicks for yourself. Now listen carefully what the Torah tells you. Leman yitavlach, v'harach b'yamim. If you do this, it's going to make you feel fantastic because you've done an act of chesed. And because of that, v'harach b'yamim, your days will be lengthened. What was the difference just now between the two times? What did we just learn a minute ago about kabedes avicha v'esimecha? What did the Torah tell us? The Torah didn't tell us that. The Torah told us just the opposite. If you honor your father and your mother, it says you're going to have a long life. Once you have your long life, this will be a good life. Here it's just the opposite. There's a cause and effect. You're going to do something which is great, which is wonderful, which is going to teach you compassion and chesed and kindness. And because you do that, you're going to feel so good. You're going to feel so great. Because of that, you're now going to have a long life. Because you did something really fantastic. A big difference. So let me ask you a few questions. First of all, the Torah describes this as a mitzvah kala, a simple mitzvah. Why do you think the Torah describes this as a mitzvah kala? Anybody have any idea? Come on, somebody must have an idea. Nobody has any idea why it's a mitzvah kala? Oh, yeah.
It doesn't really require so much effort. You don't really have to prepare to do it also.
Well, yeah, but it's a mitzvah kala because...
Well, I guess when you know that you have a good reward, it's easy to do something.
Yeah, you know you're going to get a good reward. But yeah, let me tell you, first of all, by the way, I don't believe that it's a Jewish mitzvah. You know why? Because because it doesn't cost any money. Pretty strange mitzvah, okay? You don't have to buy shmurah matzvah, you don't have to buy, you know, costumes for Purim, you don't have to buy lulavim and estrogen. You have to buy nothing. It costs you zero. It's a goyish mitzvah, okay? It's not a Jewish mitzvah. It doesn't cost you anything. And how long does it take you?
5 seconds.
A minute, whatever. It takes you a minute. It doesn't cost you anything. You even get to keep the birds, okay, for yourself, the chicks for yourself. And the Torah teaches you this is an act of chesed. It's an act of kindness. That's what the Torah is trying to teach you. If you do an act of chesed, all of a sudden your life changes. And you start to act differently and behave differently. You feel so good about it. You feel great about what you've done. You know how you feel when you've done something good, right? Okay, when you've done something good, you know you feel really great about it. And because of that, you now have a long life. So this is an incredible mitzvah. One, the Gemara tells us, well, guess what? After hearing this speech, some of you said, you know what? Tomorrow morning, we're going to go out, and we're going to find the rabbis here, and we're going to take a walk together on the street, and we're going to find the Shluach HaKein, the Shluach HaKein. We're going to find that bird, and we're going to get this mitzvah. Guess what the Gemara says in Chulin? No way, baby. Doesn't work. You know why? What does the pasuk say? Ki yikare kan sipar lefanecha. You have to find it by accident. What? You can't prepare for this? No. If you prepare for it, it doesn't work. It has to be by accident. You're walking along one day, you're talking to your friend, you're having a good time, you're on your phone, whatever it is, your iPhone, you're talking, you're certainly not looking at the traffic for sure, and you're going and everything is great, and all of a sudden, boom, there it is up in the sky, and there you have it. And if you don't find it that way, it doesn't work. Strange. What a strange mitzvah that you can't prepare for it. It doesn't cost you any money. It's the greatest mitzvah that the Torah has ever given us, and you get arichas yamim for it. Fantastic. Here's the rub. I don't know how many people here, and I'll ask the question, but I know when I normally speak to people in audiences, and I ask how many people actually were zochah had the great chus to get this mitzvah? 3 people, 4 people, 5 people, 10 people. It's certainly no more than 5% of the population. So this is the greatest tease in the world. God gave us the greatest tease in the world. I'm going to give you the greatest mitzvah. It's not going to cost any money. You don't have to prepare for it. And guess what? You're going to have a long life. Doesn't sound fair. Doesn't sound fair in a way. So it bothered me. It bothered me for a long time. And I thought about it. I said, it can't be. How is it possible that God would give us this incredible opportunity and yet hardly anyone would take advantage of it? And so I thought about it and thought about it a lot, and thinking about the concept of the Pardes, the Pshat Rebbe's Drish and Sod. I said, maybe there's something here. One day, all of a sudden, boom, it hit me. I said, you know what? The Torah is telling us something unbelievably phenomenal, incredible. That this is not just an example. Of course there's a mitzvah of a kibud avaim, and of course there's a mitzvah of a shiluach hakan. There's no question. But this is a dugma. This is an example of how we are supposed to conduct ourselves in our lifetime. Because you see, there are times when you read the word ki yukare with an aleph, there are times when God calls out to you. You're walking in the street all by yourself or with some friends, and all of a sudden, God is calling out to you and said, Malka, Rivka, Sarah, Atara, Ilana, I'm calling you. I want to give you an opportunity to do something incredible. I want to give you an opportunity to do a chesed that will only come along, just like that Shluach HaKan, maybe for 5 seconds, 10 seconds, a minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. It's not going to, it's going to be gone. I'm calling out to you. God is calling out to you. And the question is, the speech I call it is, Hashem is calling, please answer your phone. God's calling out to you with a message and saying, there's an opportunity I'm giving you right now. Are you going to take advantage of it? And so I went to see many rabbis, and they said, yes. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful understanding and a beautiful pshat. And so I renamed this, and I call it a Kan Sipar moment. In our lifetimes, there are Kan Sipar moments. When all of a sudden, by accident, something incredible happens to us. Unbelievable. And if we take advantage of it, we change forever. L'man yitavlach, we feel great. V'harachta yomim, your days are lengthened. And now once I knew that I had found this yisod, that I had found this sod in the Torah, this secret in the Torah, I knew that somewhere in my lifetime, somewhere, I was going to be confronted with this concept moment. And the question is, would I recognize it? Would I be aware of it? Would I take advantage of it? What was going to happen? And I wasn't going to become neurotic about it, but I knew. I knew intrinsically, in all the depth of my soul, that God was going to give me this concept moment. And so now what I want to do is I want to tell you about my two concept moments. I'll tell you them. Here they are. First one. The rabbi introduced me, told you that I was a former president of the Orthodox Union, involved in the Jewish community, but I actually also work for a living. And I've been in the healthcare business all of my life, run big companies, publicly traded companies, and so on. And there's a concept called raising money. When you run companies, sometimes you have to go out and you have to raise money from people. And they just, you may be when you're selling stock, you're selling bonds, whatever you're doing. And all of a sudden, one day, I was on this trip, and I came back from the trip, and I'm home, I'm so happy, I was away for about 10 days, I'm very tired, and someone calls me, the person who works for me, the person, the name is Greg Pettit, a very nice fellow, he wasn't Jewish, Irish Catholic, by the way, very nice fellow, came with me all around the United States, and he went to meet with many restaurants, he ate in more kosher restaurants than many Jews eat in, it was incredible. People didn't know he wasn't Jewish because he was with me all the time. Remember one time I was in Denver, Colorado, and I came to a shul, I came from Minnesota, and I walked in, and there were eight people, and they were so happy to see us. Ah, I can't believe it. Wonderful. I said, not so fast. You got nine, because this guy, he's not Jewish. Okay. So, anyway, he calls me and tells me, guess what? I have a great opportunity. Tomorrow morning, we're going to Columbus, Ohio. I have a great opportunity. We're going to see some people who manage money. You'll be in and out. You'll take a plane. You'll finish. To come back. I said, oh, I'm so tired, I can't believe it. No, no, let's go. So I go. I'm in LaGuardia Airport. Some of you may know it. Some of you, if you live in the New York area, it's a nice little airport. I'm in LaGuardia Airport, United Airlines. I'm there, minding my business just the way everybody else is, walking around. And all of a sudden, I see this woman. She's walking towards the counter. And she has this long garment bag, very, very long, going all the way out here. Strange, I said, what is she got in this garment bag? And she goes to the counter to get her ticket, and the next thing I know, she's crying like crazy, but crying hysterically. Not one person in the airport looks up to see why this woman is in distress. Not one person looks up to see why she's crying. It seems so strange to me, and all of a sudden it hit me. I said, no, God, this can't be. This cannot be my concept for a moment. It's Thursday. I'm tired. It can't be. I said, no, it can't be. You know? She keeps crying. I said, you know what? Maybe God is calling out to me and saying to me, Steve Savitsky, you're here. There's a reason you're in LaGuardia Airport. Here's a woman crying. Here's a woman in distress. Are you going to sit there and do nothing? I called out to you. What are you going to do about it? I go over to her. I say, look, I notice you're crying. You understand, like the entire airport could hear her crying, okay? I notice you're crying, I said. What's the problem? She said, I'll tell you what the problem is. The problem is I live in Columbus, Ohio, and I'm getting married on Saturday in my church that I grew up in. It's been my dream all my life. And I have my wedding gown. This is my wedding gown. And they told me I could put it on the plane because the last thing I wanted to do is lose it. It'll get dirty, it'll wrinkle, who knows what's going to happen to it. They promised me that I could take it with me on the plane. But the plane was delayed, another plane was canceled, there was no room, and so they told me I have to put it in baggage, in storage. You know, they're going to take it from me. And then she starts to cry. She says, I know what's going to happen, it's going to be terrible, they're going to lose it, it's my wedding gown, and I'm getting married on Saturday, and I know what's going to be. I said, okay, good. So what's your name? She says, Mary McGuire. Nice Jewish name? Yeah. Mary, I said, you don't have to worry. Don't worry about a thing. I said to myself, this is my concept for a moment. God has called out to me. Don't worry, Mary, I'll take care of it. I go to the ticket counter. I say to the lady, look, I feel so bad. This is incredible. This woman is like crying hysterically. She says, I know it's a terrible, terrible thing. And I don't know what to do about it. I said, look, I have an idea. I said, I'm here, I have my friend Greg over there. I said, here's Mary, we have different seats on the plane. How about if you rearrange the plane and everybody who's there, maybe could change some seats and give Mary, myself, and Greg the first row. We'll exchange our tickets. We'll sit with her, holding the wedding gown. We'll put on the seatbelt. We'll forego a delicious cup of coffee that they have in United Airlines, okay? And we'll sit there for 1 hour. The whole flight is 1 hour. Mary will be happy. Everything will work out, and it'll work out well. She says, no, we speak to the pilot. So meanwhile, people in the airport, people right around, they all know what's going on because they hear what's going on. Of course, I'm wearing my kippah. And she comes back 2 minutes later. She says, you know, the pilot says he'll do it. So let me see what I can do. I'm going to make some. So she makes an announcement. Any of you have seats so-and-so and so on, would you mind changing seats? We have a situation. I'll tell you about it. People come up, and she talks to them. People are very nice. They exchange their seats. We give them our seats. And then she said, let me load the plane first. So she loads the plane up. And then she says to myself, to Mary, and to Greg. First, let me go back for 1 second. My friend Greg, I told you about. Irish Catholic, nice guy. I said, Greg, do you want to get a mitzvah today? He said, what's a mitzvah? I said, it's a good deed for the Jewish people. He said, yes. I said, well, this is what we're going to do. And I tell him the whole story about Mary McGuire. I tell him everything that there is. He says, I'll do it. No problem, under one condition. I have to wear yarmulke. Greg, you're not Jewish, you have to wear yarmulke. He says, no, but if it's good for the Jewish people, I want to wear a yarmulke. So I said, okay, I always have an extra one. I give Greg my yarmulke. So the three of us, me, Greg, Mary, you wait. The whole plane loads up. And then we walk onto the plane. Hopefully, in not too distant future, all of you will have the great success of having your parents walk you down the aisle someday. When you get married, you have a magic moment. And somehow when this happened, that's what I was thinking about, because here was Mary, here was myself, and here was Greg. We're holding the wedding gown, and we're kind of marching, you know, like, we just needed like a Shrekie or somebody just to play a few songs. We're walking onto the plane. We get onto the plane, everyone on the plane is laughing and applauding. We sit down in the first row, put on our seatbelts. The pilot gets on. He says, I want to thank everyone for being so considerate and for changing their seats. And particularly, I want to congratulate Mary McGuire. Felt like I was back in shul. Mary McGuire and her forthcoming marriage this Saturday at church in Columbus, Ohio. And of course, we want to thank Rabbi Stavisky. Wonderful. How many people get smicha from United Airlines? Not everybody, okay? Of course, when I told my mother about it, what do you think she said? Why couldn't you get smicha from LL? And Rabbi Ken. Oh, Greg was so, he was in awe. He was the happiest guy in the world. Okay. The plane lands. We land in Columbus, Ohio. It's now 12 o'clock in the afternoon. And I say to Mary, do me a favor. People were so nice. Let's just stand outside in front of the plane. And as people come out, let's just say thank them. Well, people came out to thank us. And every single person, as they walked out, thank you, thank you, thank you. I didn't know there were 8 Jewish people on the plane. And they waited, these 8 people. And when everyone else finished, they walked by. Let me tell you what they said. They said, you don't know how much you did to me today. You restored my faith in being a Jewish person. Another person, you don't know how proud I was today to be a Jew. Another person, for so many years, I never told them when I was Jewish. Today, when I saw you with your kippah, and I saw what you did, I felt so good about being a Jew. Could you imagine that? I didn't know who these people were. One woman was waiting near the end. She came over to me and said, you know, I grew up in an environment which was more or less traditional, but I kind of gave it up and I forgot about it. But I've been thinking about years from now, like, maybe I should really get more involved. You know what? I think I'm going to start to get a little bit more involved. Maybe I should start learning a little bit of Torah. And she said, thank you so much. Could you imagine what it was like? Ki yikare lecha baderach. You think I was expecting Mary McGuire to be on my flight? You think I was expecting to be in LaGuardia Airport? You think I prepared for the fact that now all of a sudden God was calling out to me, ki yikare lecha baderach. God was calling out to me and saying, Steve Savitsky, don't you see that I'm here? Don't you see that I'm calling out to you? You're not here for no reason. There's a reason you're here in this place at this time. And the reason was because I'm giving you an opportunity to do an act of chesed, which L'mani Tavach is going to make. Do you think I felt good after that? You think I felt good? I felt great. I didn't feel good. Barakta Yamin, that I have long life because of that? Yes. Because every time I think about it, it makes me feel better and better. I called my wife and I said, guess what? I just had the greatest day in Columbus, Ohio. She said, it's only 12 o'clock. Your meeting's 1 o'clock. I said, who cares? Who cares about the meeting? Could you imagine? I had a Kantipra moment. That's what a Kantipra moment is like. It's nothing you could prepare for. It's nothing, but you have to become observant. And now I want to tell you about my second one. Because my second Kantipra moment makes the first Kantipra moment like the most dull thing that ever existed in the world. Okay, I'm president of the Orthodox Union. All of you know OU, all of you know about the OU, right? What do you know about it? Nice kosher symbol, you feel good, sometimes you're in the airport, you don't know, there's nothing kosher, but all of a sudden now, people used to ask me, how come the OU does so well? I said, because every day people give us brachas. Because you're someplace, I don't know where, you're in Adventureland, you're in some place, and all of a sudden you're starving, and you take it, all of a sudden there's a thing of ice cream, and you go to your mother, I can't believe it, there's an OU on it, thank God, it's unbelievable. The OU, you see the OU, you can trust it. It makes life pretty easy now, like it is sometimes in Eric Israel, you don't understand a lot of Hebrew writing, you're not sure what everything really is, but you think it's kosher. In the States, you know, you see the OU, you don't have to worry. But we do a lot of other things at the OU, and I'm sure all of you know about one of them, which is NCSY. Some of you belong to NCSY, have been involved in NCSY. And so NCSY is a great program. During the time that I was president for 6 years of the Orthodox Union, and chairman of the board for another six. During that time, we started a program in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Buenos Aires, Argentina. In Argentina, there are 250,000 Jews. It's one of the largest Jewish populations outside of, the United States, and probably within the five largest. England only has 300,000, France has 400,000. Buenos Aires in Argentina has a large population. Assimilation rate about 75%. Could you imagine 75% of the people there get lost to Judaism? So we started NCSY, and it's a wonderful chapter, and it's doing well. And we're going to have a big inauguration of it, a big dedication, and so they begged me to come. I should come with a small delegation. I go to Buenos Aires with four or five people who come from the OU, and we have everything planned out. We're leaving Wednesday night, getting there Thursday night, Friday night, Shabbos night, Sunday, we're going back to New York. During those 4 days, it's packed, jam-packed. Every day I'm speaking in eight different shuls and all kinds of things, and ceremonies, and meeting all the rabbis. Everything is programmed. I come the first day, it's Thursday. And I hear that in the shul that I'm in, called Sukkot David, in Buenos Aires, there's a program on the third floor. For someone who has a lot of money, has endowed a program, they take college kids, regular college kids, and they pay them to learn Torah. Just like you do here. You pay to learn Torah. There they pay you to learn Torah. You come once or twice a week, and they pay you. I heard about the program, I wanted to see the program. And so after I gave a speech downstairs on the first floor, I said, excuse me, I went up to the third floor. And there were about nine young men, college kids, dressed the way college kids are normally dressed, with one rabbi, and he's teaching them Torah. I look in the window, very interesting, I see it, okay, I'm ready to leave. The teacher looks at me and says, no, come inside. So I come inside, and he tells me what the program is all about, and I say, is there anybody here, any of the students here, any of you speak English? One young man raises his hand, a nice looking young man, handsome, about 6'4", 6'5". And he says, yes, I speak English. I said, wonderful, what's your name? He says, my name is Martin Leibovich. I said, oh, lovely, Martin, where did you learn to speak English? So he says, well, and all the kids go, come on, Martin, Tagidlo, okay, tell them. They said in Spanish, whatever it is. tell them why you speak, why you speak English. He says, okay, look, I'll tell you. He says, I happen to be a very, very good basketball player. And I have a scholarship, a basketball scholarship, to a college in the United States called Barry University. It's a very good college. It's a Division II basketball team. And I have a full scholarship, and I play for them. I even play for the Argentina national team. So that's why, so I said, great. I said, wonderful. I said, and you're here in Argentina now for the summer? He says, yes, I'm here now in Argentina. And I said, well, how do you like learning Torah? says, oh, I love learning Torah. It's so much fun, and I'm enjoying it so much. And I said, well, what's going to happen when the summer is over? You have to go back to this Catholic university. What's going to happen to you? He doesn't say anything. You know what he does? Busts the pride. And I see tears coming down his eye. And I'm saying to myself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have you given me another kansi for a moment? Is this a moment, ki yikare lecha v'derach? Is this a moment when you've reached out to me again? You've called out to me, and I'm here with this young man who, when I ask him if he wants to learn Torah, what does he do? He starts to cry. So what you can do, you can walk away, can't you? You can say, who cares? Okay. So he cries. Who cares? Or can I say to myself, maybe God's giving me an opportunity. A kansi for a moment that's only going to come about, that's going to be there for exactly 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and what do I do with it? And so I say to him, Martin, we don't know each other, but I could tell you there is a school in New York that I think you would love and you would enjoy. So what's the name of the school? Yeshiva University. He says, Yeshiva University, I never heard of it. What is it? I said, it's a great school. It's a wonderful school. I said, you could learn Torah. And guess what? They even have a basketball team. And I said, look, I'm not sure if you're good enough to play in Yeshiva University basketball. After all, you play for the Argentina national team, and you have to play for Division II basketball scholarship. But I think somehow you could make the Yeshiva University basketball team. And so I get on the cell phone, and I call my friend Johnny Halpert, who's the coach of the team. You know how sometimes with the cell phone, you're someplace and it's a terrible connection? Here I am in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I pick up the phone, I hit his number. One ring, he picks up the phone. It's clear as a bell, and I tell him, Johnny, I don't know what I'm doing here. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a plan for me to be here, but I want you to meet somebody. And so he talks to him for 2 minutes, tells him he'd love him to come to Yeshiva University to learn Torah. We hang up, and he says to me, he's the coach of the team. I said, yeah. He says, well, he didn't ask me anything about basketball. I said, don't worry. He's not worried about basketball. I said, but Martin, this is a wonderful opportunity. But think about it. Think about whether you want to do it or not. So I go, I leave, I call my wife, and I say, I don't know what happened, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu just put me once again in a concentration room. I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know how it's going to end. But I know that I did what I was supposed to do. Anyway, Saturday night, they have a big malacha malka. Tremendous. There's a Rabbi Lushak. Does anybody know Rabbi Lushak? He's a great person and a great speaker. He speaks in Spanish. And I go to the malacha malka, and he has 300 kids there. And he's talking, and I have no idea what he's saying, but I'll do whatever he says. It makes no difference. Because he's so inspirational. And I'm looking for Martin. Not there. Martin's not there. So I leave. I'm a little disappointed. As I'm walking out, coming up the steps, here's Martin. Here's my boy. He's there. He has a girlfriend, Pamela. He introduces. It turns out she's Jewish, but you would never know it by how she dressed and how she looked and so on. Jewish, okay. I said, Martin, what do you think? He says, I'll tell you, I've thought about so much. From the moment I met you on Thursday, I haven't been able to think and stop thinking about it every single moment. He said, but I'm not sure about my parents. You know, I have a free scholarship to play basketball. It's an opportunity of a lifetime for me. My parents don't have a lot of money. For me to get a free scholarship and to go to play basketball, it could be anything I want. I don't think my parents really want me to do it. They just don't think it's a good idea. So I said, look, think about it a lot. Maybe it'll work out. I go back home Sunday night. I tell my family. My whole family knows all about the story of Martin Luther. And I'm waiting and waiting. A week goes by. All of a sudden, I'm in my office one day, I hear the bizz, pick up the phone. Hello, Mr. Savitsky, this is Martin. I thought about it a lot. I would love to come to Yeshiva University. Could you talk to my parents? So my wife and I get on the phone. We speak to the parents. We talk to them. We talk about what it's like, how he can be anything he wants. He can go to Yeshiva University. He can become a doctor and a lawyer. He can do anything. There's nothing he can't do, but he'll have a Torah life. And after many, many conversations with the parents, finally they say, okay, let's see what happens. I said, Martin, give me your transcript. And so we get his transcript. And, we send it to Yeshiva University. And we go back and forth for the next 5 weeks. And I keep calling him. He keeps calling me. I'm not sure. I think, I said, let's try. Let's see what happens. And finally, we We reached the point, Yeshiva University gives me the great news that they decided to give him a full scholarship. Come to Yeshiva University. Now I call him and say, Martin, now is the time when you have to make up your mind. Because remember, I never told the coach, I never said anything to the coach in the other school because I didn't want him to jeopardize losing a scholarship. I said, now it's up to you to decide what you really want to do. I want to tell you one thing. If you decide to come, the Yetzer Hara is going to stop you. He's going to find a way. Don't you think you're a good basketball player, he's a better basketball player, okay? And he's going to get up earlier than you, and he's going to stay up later than you, and he's going to think of a million reasons why you shouldn't do it. But you've got to tell me the truth. Do you really want to come? He says, yes. I said, great. And I want you to write a letter. I want you to write a letter to the coach, the basketball coach, and tell him when you want to come. I said, and I'm not helping you. I'm not going to give you any advice. Write what you want. So I want to read you the letter of a 20-year-old boy, okay? Not that much older than you. I want to read you the letter he says. Listen to this letter. He wrote it. I never touched it. Dear Coach Gonzalez, unfortunately, I'm writing to give you very bad news. It is very hard for me to write this email to you, but I know deep in my heart that there's no other way to go than to tell you the truth. As you know, I am Jewish, and as a Jew, there are certain things I can and cannot do. I grew up in a secular family that never got involved with Judaism. As I grew up, I started to learn about my religion. I was getting more involved, but obstacles were always placed in my path that did not allow me to pursue my Jewish identity. So you see, here was a boy who was looking to find a way back. And there was no way back because it didn't make any sense. There were no plans. Because how is it going to happen? How could it possibly happen in his world that he would find a way out of his situation? Here he is. He's a neshama that's longing to become Jewish. Could you understand that? He's a neshama that's longing to become Jewish. Not just sitting there rote, you know, he's gone through this. I went through 8 years of elementary school, and I got to high school, and I went to Marasara, and I went to Marashan, I went here, and I went to Shalabam, and this and this. Everything came along. No, nothing came for him. Don't you understand that nothing came for this young man? And he was crying out to Hashem, saying, you got to help me, but I don't know how it's going to work. That's what he was basically saying. And I was getting more involved, but there are obstacles that were always placed in my path. Let me give you a few examples of the things I'm trying to achieve. I was hoping one day to only eat kosher food, keep Shabbos, and study Torah. In Barry University, these goals are almost impossible to achieve. I had just about given up hope. When one day Steve Savitsky, the president of the Orthodox Union, came to my study group. He was visiting Argentina with a mission group and told me about a unique university in New York called Yeshiva University. There, everybody is Jewish, and I'll be able to lead a complete Jewish life, studying Torah with famous rabbis, eating kosher, and keeping Shabbos. I know that apologizing is not enough, but I hope you can understand my situation. It has always been my dream to become a Torah Jew. Best wishes for a successful season. This is a letter that he writes, not much older than yours. This is a letter that he writes to the coach. Here's what the coach says. Listen to what he says. Dear Martin, I was so surprised to hear about your decision. We have such great plans for you this season. As a coach, I am disappointed. But as a person, I understand you're following your heart and your religion. May God bless you. I hope you achieve your goal of becoming a Torah Jew. Good luck in New York. That's what the coach says there. Could you imagine this? Here was this boy yearning somehow to become Jewish. And here I am, an American Airlines, coming to Buenos Aires, Argentina, who I knew exactly why I was coming for all these meetings, but that wasn't the only reason I was coming. God had another plan. He had a concipro moment for me. And he was going to give me an opportunity, literally for 5 minutes of my life, to touch someone, to change someone's life. Ki yikare lecha baderach. I couldn't plan for it. I couldn't do anything. L'man yitav lach, so that I would feel so good. L'man yarichon yamech, my days would be lengthened. And I could have walked away and said, I don't even know who this boy is, because he's one moment of my life for 5 minutes. And so Martin's coming to New York. School starting in August. He decides he's coming. We get ready to come. And of course, as you would imagine, because of the Yetzer Hara, the day he came, that Sunday, was the day they had the 10 Matos from Mitzrayim in New York. Hail and rain and Barit and Choshech and you name it. Every plane was being canceled and flights were delayed. It was an unbelievable day. Hardly any flights were getting in and out of Buenos Aires or Miami. And finally, he calls me. He says, "Mr. Savitsky, I'm stuck in the airport in Miami." He said, "My plane came and now they canceled my flight. I don't know what to do. You were right. The Yetzer Hara is trying desperately to stop me to come from learning Torah." I said, "Martin, do you really want to come?" He said, "You know how much I want to come." I said, "So just hang on the phone. Don't do anything." I put my wife on the phone. I called JetBlue. I said, "Do you have any flights that are still leaving to come to New York?" "Yes. We have one at 9 o'clock. It's like 8:30. I said, "Any seats?" "We have one seat. A middle seat." Martin loves middle seats. Don't we all love middle seats? I booked the seat. I say, "Martin, I booked you a flight on JetBlue. Get over there right now." And so Martin goes. And of course, I watch the weather, the news. Flights are delayed. I go to Kennedy Airport. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. The plane lands. I'm waiting by the baggage area. Remember, I met Martin Leibovich for 5 minutes of my life. I've seen him. I know what he looks like and so on. But I met him for 5 minutes. And so I want to make sure, I hope I remember what he looks like. So I didn't know, well, the people start coming down from the ramp to the baggage area. I know nobody here ever goes to the movies or watches movies, but I do. And so sometimes they have these movies where they have these great love scenes of the two people who somehow seem to miss each other. And like the music is going slow, and the two of them are kind of like walking like, just like you see the music is going so slow, and are they going to meet each other? Are they going to find each other? What's going to happen? And that's how I felt with Martin. Then all of a sudden, here I see him. And Martin comes and we grab each other and we hug each other. And I'm so happy to see him. Martin comes to New York, comes to my house. The next day, we take him to Yeshiva University. I register him for classes. We walk in the hall, we walk in Amsterdam Avenue. There's Richard Joe, the president of Yeshiva University. He comes, says, "Ah, I know who this guy is. He's a future basketball star at Yeshiva University." I said, no. "He's a future chief rabbi of Argentina. That's who he is." And Martin says to me, and he says to Martin, "Oh, by the way, when you kind of get yourself settled, give me a call, come to my house for Shabbos, bring some of your friends." So he says to me, "Who's that guy?" I said, "He's the president of the university." I said, "Didn't the president of Barry University invite you for Shabbos?" He says, "No, really?" I said, "Yes, you'll come, you go to his house." Anyway, Martin goes to Yeshiva University, and we stay in touch, of course. He calls me all the time. "How are you doing? It's Suyan. Everything's great." First basketball game starts. First game, he's playing basketball. We come, our whole family. Atara, I can tell you, all of us in droves. We do a lot of things in droves in our family. By the way. When there's a Chumash party, everybody comes with 5 people. We come with 50. But everyone comes. That's the way we are. We come to the game. Game's going to start. Martin is wearing a kippah. With probably about 55 bobby pins. He wanted to make sure it doesn't fall off. And I had told Martin, I said, "Martin, when you play basketball for Yeshiva University, you're not just playing for Yeshiva University, you're playing for the Jewish people." And he said, "I know." And so they line up, the team lines up, they play the Star Spangled Banner, and then they play the HaTikvah. And there I watch Martin, and I see the same tears coming down his eye. And we have tears down our eye. His parents of Buenos Aires who were listening to the game had tears down their eye. The same tears that I saw 2 months ago when I was in Argentina. Of course, Martin went on to be an incredible basketball player. That night, because of the fact that no one knew who he was, he played City College, a team they had never beaten before. Martin scored 27 points. He was great. After that, he became an all-city. But of course, you know, because he was such a good player, the way it would work is that the other teams would put 4 people on Martin and one on all the rest, because they didn't care about the rest of the people. And the Yeshiva University did very well. They won a lot of games. Martin got all kind of awards and everything. And Martin went on to become an incredible, incredible student. And not just basketball, became a mensch, became a wonderful person, became part of our family, and just everything that happened. Martin graduates Yeshiva University. During the time that he's there, he spends many, many Shabbosim in our house. And Tyrosounds, my other daughter, Penina. And many, many people call us because we've become the surrogate parents. So people are calling us for Shidduchim. Because he's a wonderful boy, and handsome, and smart, and nice. And he goes out on dates. But somehow, I don't know, it just doesn't work out. He finishes university, he gets a good job, he takes the time to take a vacation. He goes back to Buenos Aires. Goes back to Buenos Aires to see his family. Someone says to him, "Martin, have you seen Pamela? Remember Pamela? She went back in the story. Have you seen Pamela lately?" He says, "No, Pamela and I haven't spoken in a few years." He says, "Well, you know, she decided to learn Torah. And she went to Israel. And she came back and she shomer Shabbat." "What? Really?" And they reunited. And of course, they get married. They get married, and they live in Buenos Aires. Martin comes to New York a little bit, but he decides to go back to Buenos Aires. Today, Martin has two lovely, lovely kids, a boy and a girl. One's about 4 years old, one's about 2 years old. Martin does some business and so on, but Martin has decided that he wants to spend time learning Torah. And now Martin is, believe it or not, the NCSY director of Buenos Aires, Argentina, for the OU. And he called me a few weeks ago and told me, he says, "Mr. Savitsky, you're not going to believe this." He says, "But you know, I now teach a class for college boys who don't know anything. I teach them Gemara once a week. And I'm in the room that you met me in. The room that you met me in 7 years ago. The room that I shed that one tear, and you changed my whole life. I now teach Torah to boys who are college boys." And so, this is the message. And it's a simple message. I ask myself this question. Okay, I think I'm a pretty good guy. I'm a good father and a grandfather, and now thank God a great-grandfather. I learned Torah a lot. I've been involved in Otsuke Serpent, Siva Be'amun, I hope. I do a lot of things, but I think about this. Could you imagine after 120 years, you come to the Olam HaEmes, and they put up the screen, and God says to me, "What happened with Martin Leibovich?" And I said, "What are you talking about? Who's Martin Leibovich? Don't you remember the boy that you met in Argentina? The boy who shed a tear? Ki yitorei lecha baderech, when you were just walking along the path, and I gave you an opportunity, I called out to you, and I said, 'Young man, Mr. Savitsky, here's an opportunity I'm giving you,' and you turned away. What would happen? What would have happened to Martin Leibovich? What would have happened when I was his plan? When God's, and we sit here and learn Torah, and you'll learn, because you know how beautiful Torah is. We are sitting here today, what I would call maminim, Benos Mamino. Okay? We are the ones who are the most faithful. When you see a blade of grass that grows, a leaf that falls from a tree, do you think it happens by accident? Do you think anything happens by accident? Hamachadesh betuva b'chol yom tamid. God renews himself every single day, and he talks to us, and he gives us opportunities. And he gives us an opportunity to accomplish Torah. When he gave us this mitzvah in the Torah, he just didn't say, "You're going to be lucky, you 3% of the people who are going to be able to do this mitzvah. Yes, some will. But for the 97% of the other people, I'm going to give you something equally as good. I'm going to give you Kansipra moments in your life." When all of a sudden, an opportunity comes along, and you can't plan for it, you can't think about it, but instinctively, you have to act within 1 minute. Do I do it or don't I do it? It's an impulse. And if you do it, l'man yitavlach. It's going to be so good. And then the harachta yamin. So I want you to become observant Jews. Observant Jews. Not myopic Jews. Myopic Jews look down, they don't look at the world. Observant Jews look around all the time and say, "Why am I here? What am I doing here? Why did God put me here? Is it the supermarket? Is it the mall? Is it a baseball game? Is it sitting in the basement? Just, what am I doing here? And what are the opportunities?" And if you do that, I promise you that somewhere in your lifetime, you're going to have a Kansipar moment. And if you take advantage of it, and you utilize it correctly, l'man yarichan yamecha, your life is going to be changed completely. L'man yitavlach, you'll feel so good. That's the mitzvah. That's the secret mitzvah that I found. I can't see for a moment. So I think over the years, hopefully I'll be meeting some of you in another place and another time. You'll come over to me, as hundreds of people have, and emails that I have and letters that I have and stories that I have of people that tell me, I had a Kansi for a moment, and I thought about you. And you know why? Because of that, I changed myself and I changed somebody else. So that was the message. It's a simple message. It's not complex. If you utilize it and you think about it, your life could probably change forever. So you are the future of the Jewish people. And I'm telling you now, you're going to change the Jewish life and Jewish history and Jewish destiny. Try to see if once in your life, or twice, you're going to have a Kansi for a moment. And if you do, let Atara know about it, if you don't let me know about it. And I want to hear about it, because it, to me, it's the most beautiful thing that ever happened. Because of that, many, many people have come to me with incredible stories of this esoteric mitzvah. This mitzvah that I don't think anybody understands, and maybe a new way of looking at it. So thank you very much for indulging me, and for listening to the stories, and for the Torah.